They looked like they'd been dropped into the room against their will, like actors who had wandered onto a stage without knowing what play they were in. And he felt almost sorry for them as they exchanged glances, sensing the scream gathering strength low down inside him. The officers introduced themselves. The man, the shorter of the two, went first, followed by his female colleague. Both of them took care to let him know their Christian names, like that would help.
"I'm sorry, Marcus, but we've got bad news."
He didn't take in the names, not really. Just stared at the heads, registering details that he sensed would stay with him for a long time after he'd left the room. A dirty collar. The delicate map of veins on a drinker's nose. Dark roots coming through a dye job.
"Angie," he said. "It's Angie, isn't it?"
"I'm sorry."
"Tell me."
"There was an accident."
"Bad one?"
"The car didn't stop, I'm afraid."
And as he watched their mouths forming the words, a single banal thought rose above the noise in his head, like a distant voice just audible above the hiss of a badly tuned radio.
"That's why they sent a woman. Because they're supposed to be more sensitive. Or maybe they think there's less chance I'll break down, get hysterical, whatever."
"We think it jumped the lights and the driver couldn't brake in time for the zebra crossing. Over the limit, like as not."
The copper took another good-sized breath.
"We found it burned out the next morning a few miles away. Joyriders."
It was sticky inside the room, and he could smell the recent redecoration.
"Who's looking after Robbie?"
He watched the officer's eyes slide away from his own, and felt something tear in his chest.
"I'm sorry," the woman said. "They were both pronounced dead at the scene."
He stared at the copper, shivering as his veins began to freeze and splinter under his skin. He felt the blood turning black and powdery, whispering beneath his tattoos and his yellowing flesh, like the blood of something that had been dead for a very long time. Tom Thorne wasn't convinced that the old woman had the ace she was so obviously representing. He wasn't fooled for a minute by the sweet old lady's smile and the spectacles, by the cute tartan handbag. He didn't believe the square-jawed type in the tux either. He put the guy on a pair of tens at most. Thorne raised $15. The ace he was holding gave him top pair, but with three hearts on the board, he wanted to scare off anyone who might possibly be chasing the flush. The guy in the tux folded, quickly followed by the bald bloke in the loud shirt, who'd spent the entire game chomping on a fat cigar. Now, it was just Thorne and the old woman. She took her time, but eventually laid down her cards and let him take the $25 in the pot. This was the joy and the frustration of online poker. Though the players were real, the graphics of the characters around the table never changed. For all Thorne knew, the old woman, who rejoiced in the username Top Bluffer, was in fact a dough-faced adolescent in the American Midwest. Thorne, who for the purposes of internet gambling was known as the Card Cop, had been logging on to PokerPro.com for a few months. It was a relaxing way of winding down at the end of a shift, or, like tonight, killing time while he was waiting for Louise to call. Flicking his eyes to the bottom of the screen, he saw that he was $40 up for the evening. Thorne got up and walked across to the music system. He ejected the Laura Cantrell CD he'd been listening to and began looking for a suitable replacement, deciding that he'd give it until 2 o'clock, then he'd call it a night. He'd been involved with D.I. Louise Porter since the end of May, since the end of a case they'd worked on together, when Thorne had been seconded to her team on the kidnap investigation unit. The Mullen case had cost a number of lives, some lost, and many more shattered beyond repair. Thorne and Louise were as surprised as anyone that they had forged something positive out of the carnage.